welcome to NC Spin, an unrehearsed discussion about issues of interest to North Carolina. Now here's the host of NC Spin, Tom Campbell.
Welcome to NC Spin. I'm Brad Crone, sitting in this week for vacationing Tom Campbell. Fires, floods, and fatalities are left in the wake of this week's hurricane. State government is put to the test, and students, parents, and educators are still working on the upcoming academic year. Plus, our panel will tell us something we don't know. Joining our panel this week are two recent birthday boys, Howard Lee, former senator and chair of the State Board of Education, Joe Mavretic, former speaker of the North Carolina House, Chris Fitzsimon, director of State's Newsroom, and John Hood, syndicated columnist and author. We will begin our uninterrupted discussion after these brief messages from our underwriters.
In more than 21 years on NC Spin, I never endorsed a product or sponsor, but I volunteered to do this message for family physicians. Over the past 40 years, my family doctor could quickly diagnose my illnesses because he knew my medical history. Evidence suggests I'll live longer, have a higher quality of life, and save 33% on health care costs. I believe in my trusted relationship with my family physician.
Family Physicians, your trusted health care advisor for life.
Your life is more flexible and efficient than ever, and your energy is too. See how North Carolina's electric cooperatives are building a brighter future for the rural communities we serve at ncelectriccooperatives.com/brighter.
Government plays a key role in your life, affecting your paycheck, the way you educate your kids, the way you do business. How can you tell if government is doing a good job, making the right choices, spending tax dollars wisely? CarolinaJournal.com tackles those questions every day. The John Locke Foundation publishes Carolina Journal in print each month and on the web each day at CarolinaJournal.com. You'll find exclusive investigative reports on topics no one else is covering. What else? A rundown of the best news stories, editorials, and opinion columns in North Carolina. John Hood's Daily Journal. News stories and important public events at CarolinaJournal.tv. And the voices of the newsmakers themselves at Carolina Journal Radio. In print, on the air, and on the web, you can find the information you need at CarolinaJournal.com.
We now return to NC Spin.
Before we begin, we want to recognize Howard Lee for another milestone. Howard just completed a goal by hiking 120 miles on the Mountain to Sea Trail. Howard is the father of North Carolina's flagship state hiking trail. As Secretary of Natural Resources and Community Development, Howard championed nature trails and a massive expansion of our public parks in 1977. Howard, it's been a great investment for North Carolina. Congratulations to you and thank you for your vision and your leadership. Let's begin the spin. A Category 1 hurricane made landfall in Brunswick County early Tuesday morning, leaving in its wake a lot of damage across North Carolina. Question one to Chris, how did the emergency management system do during this crisis?
Well, it seemed to do fairly well. I think that I didn't hear any major snafus or complaints. I do think the lesson of this storm is, you know, this was a Category 1 storm. It was a hurricane when it hit, then it quickly became a tropical storm. I think we have a tendency to be to overhype hurricanes, and everybody says, what's the big deal? This one actually wasn't a major storm, but did major damage. It caused a tornado in Bertie County that unfortunately took some lives. It's all a reminder that we have to take all these storms seriously. And I think state government overall, the Cooper administration, did a good job.
Joe Mavretic, the National Hurricane Center, updated their forecast for this fall, saying we could have a very active hurricane system. Is this just a dry run for emergency management?
Well, it could be. I think one of the takeaways is that you have to be very careful about the weather guessers. Sometimes they don't get it right. In this case, the coastal part of North Carolina had almost no damage at all. And so I think we have to be a little more cautious and have a little more patience before we start major evacuations.
Howard, it all comes down to the money. If we have a series of hurricanes, what does that do to the budget?
I think it's going to have a direct impact on the budget. I think the budget was in some trouble prior to this hurricane because of the coronavirus and some other pressures that are going on. So I think it's going to be a real challenge going forward to try and meet all of our obligations and be able to balance our budget.
John, the state government's been facing two crises, COVID-19 and now this. Give us grades on how well the governor and state government's been doing.
Well, I disagree with some of what the governor's done on the COVID crisis, but I think the handling of the hurricane was very good. North Carolina has developed a capacity across actually a couple of decades of handling emergency situations like hurricanes and tornadoes pretty well. We don't always do a good job afterwards of cleaning up the mess and getting aid where it's supposed to go. But as far as handling the immediate crisis, I think it went pretty well.
Joe, the underlying story that really isn't covered very much is the impact on agriculture, agribusiness, and our farmers across eastern North Carolina. Year after year, they've just been hammered.
Well, Tuesday I took a drive down east and came back on Wednesday. Tobacco's primed about a third of the way up the stalk. Cotton is starting to flower. Soybeans look good. Corn's starting to dry pretty well. I didn't see any fields flattened by wind or rain. We had a good strawberry season. Blueberries and peaches are doing pretty good right now. I don't know the effect of the Chinese flu on hogs and chickens and turkeys, and it's a bit early to tell about sweet potatoes and apples.
And those are key crops for the state of North Carolina and for our agribusiness interests for sure. Let's go to the other big story in the state. Governor Roy Cooper announced on Wednesday that the state will stay in phase two for another 5 weeks, meaning bars and gyms will remain closed. Question to John, is this the right direction or is the governor being too cautious?
I think the governor has been too cautious in these areas. The governor got a question about that. A reporter from the Fayetteville Observer asked him, why is it okay for restaurants and breweries and other institutions to be open and serve alcohol and for bars not to? I don't think the governor's answer was very persuasive to anybody. But it also, the governor's decision was not a surprise. Most people, including people in the industries affected, assume the governor is simply not going to open their industries up for the foreseeable future. That's why some of them are going ahead and declaring bankruptcy, in a few cases moving to other, making preparations to move to other states where they can be in business, and in some cases actually engaging in what you might call civil disobedience. We'll just have to see in September if the governor makes a course correction. He obviously thinks right now that the mix is defensible.
Chris, wouldn't you say, though, a lot of rest on individual responsibility? I went down Hillsborough Street towards NC campus earlier this week, and students had gathered at a restaurant, no social distancing, no wearing a mask.
Well, I think that's the point. Absolutely. It's a lot of social responsibility, individual responsibility, but it's also government does play a role. And I still think Governor Cooper is hitting about the right balance. We can look all across the country to see Arizona, where a Republican governor didn't do anything, and then he has to rush to close the bars. We see South Carolina with a much higher positivity rate than North Carolina. You can look all around the country. We still have too many people in the hospital. We still have too many people dying. Our 7-day rolling death rate is still as high as it's been since this pandemic started. So it's no time to ease up. And I do think, however, we still need to reinforce the message that people have a lot they can do themselves, primarily wearing a mask when they're anywhere near anybody else. Unfortunately, that's still, a lot of folks are still not taking that seriously.
Howard, Zach Medford, president of the North Carolina Bar and Tavern Association, says the governor is shutting down the industry, and if he does, he should at least have some type of assistance plan for our bars and for our taverns. What do you say about an economic bailout plan for bars and taverns and gyms?
Well, I certainly think that is a reasonable suggestion by a person who's been directly impacted. I recall in 9/11, I was in the airport concessions business and was shut down for 3 weeks and lost thousands and thousands of dollars, but I recovered on my own. I don't think since the government didn't create this problem that we should have any great pressures to go the extra mile. But I do understand and empathize with the business people.
Another area of COVID-19 this week's in the education community. Joe Mavretic, our educators, parents, and students are all trying to figure out a safe plan to return to school. What are you hearing and seeing in that arena?
Well, you know, local school boards are elected to take care of their district. And a few boards, like the one in Chatham County, I think have done a very good job of being leaders. In Chatham County, they closed the schools for the first half year, but gave families the option of going either viral or, let's see, what's the word that they use?
Hybrid.
Remote. And viral or remote. And viral, they use a standard course of study that's been out there for years by a very good company. And the remote approach to it is that they will use their own teachers, but in a remote setting. For students that don't have access, they will get printed materials on a regular basis. What impresses me is that a few counties like Chatham had the courage to do this early and be leaders across the state, and I think that school board and their superintendent ought to be applauded.
Howard Lee, in Chapel Hill, the Orange County Health Director issued a statement yesterday strongly urging UNC Chapel Hill to look at virtual classes for the next 5 weeks. The Board of Commissioners have been meeting with university officials. What is the safe approach there?
I don't know. I'm not a great fan of reopening the campus to the extent that it has been planned so far. I have a high degree of respect for Chancellor Guttrewitz and certainly recognize that he's doing everything within his power to try to keep the environment a safe one for the students. But you cannot control UNC students from gathering in large crowds, even in the best of circumstances. So I don't know how in the world we can manage this without having a real potential disaster. I support what the health director has said, and I know that the university is considering that. And to me, the safest thing would be to do remote, to do virtual, but not to bring people back on this campus because it's going to be hard to control.
John Hood, the clock's running out as far as getting preparations in place. What's the right answer here?
Actually, some universities, their students are already moving in or preparing to move in. The UNC system does not have a single calendar, so some schools are starting in August, some are opening in September. They're mostly eliminating breaks and concluding the fall semester early. I think the schools absolutely had to open to students in an on-campus way. I think that the alternative is simply unthinkable. Lots of students would not sign up for a fall semester they would view as a waste of their money and a waste of their time. So I think that the universities are doing the right thing. And it is noticeable that Orange County is the only place where the local health director has tried to push for this. They were pushed into it by some institutions that I think are have a heartfelt concern about their employees. These are unions and would-be unions. But I think they also see this as an opportunity to flex their leverage. They were able to accomplish that in Orange County, but I don't think the other counties where UNC campuses are located will say the same kinds of things. We'll have to see.
Chris, Wake County School Board member Bill Fletcher made a comment this week. There are over 700 school buses in Wake County, 25 million square feet of classroom space in the Wake County school system that they have to keep clean and sanitized and hygienic. As school opens throughout the process, they have absolutely no additional money for janitorial support.
Well, that's right. I think one of the shortcomings of this past legislative session is the failure to recognize the tremendous needs to open these schools, whether it's under Plan B or Plan C that the governor laid out, and then a lot of schools are taking various versions of those. I think the same is true for our university system. To do all these things in a responsible, socially distant way does cost more money, does mean more people, does need a lot of things. One quick thing about the university, I was interested this week that UNC Chapel Hill Chancellor Guskowitz said he was advised by Peter Hans and the outgoing UNC President Bill Roper to stay the course and to keep the schools opening. I would be interested to know what the Board of Governors and President Hans think. I think we're going to hear a lot more reporting from a lot of sources about what role the university, the governance is playing. I think they deserve, we need to know a lot more about what the leadership of the university system thinks, not just what each individual chancellor says.
Let's turn to the business fallout. Joe, big banks in Charlotte like Ally, Barings, LendingTree, and Red Ventures announced this week they'll have their employees work from home for at least until next year. Is that trend going to continue in businesses big and small?
Absolutely. I think we're at a watershed with regard to technology. I don't think there's any question at all that people are going to work from home. They're going to get more comfortable at home. I think there's going to be a new industry giving background so that when people look at you at home on television, on Zoom and FaceTime and whatever, they see marvelous backgrounds. I think it's the coming way. And I did some of the homeschooling by internet yesterday, and it was amazing to me that I see what used to be Hooked on Phonics done with marvelous animation, and I think the whole world is going to change because of the virus.
John, bad news economically on the jobs front. 1.2 million new unemployment claims announced this week. Commerce Department announcing additional economic growth and decline in the month of July on Friday. Where is the economy headed without another round of stimulus from Congress?
Well, I think ultimately there will be some additional congressional action. I don't think it's the major story here. It's really how can industries either be allowed to reopen or, as Joe is getting at, adjust to not either being allowed or not be thinking it wise to operate as normal and adapting to that. There are some industries. There are obvious ones that are going to have trouble. We've already talked about bars and you know, things that serve people directly, but also commercial real estate. If it is true that there's going to be a permanent or lasting change in how employees work and where they work from, obviously some areas of North Carolina will benefit from that as people buy larger houses in the suburbs or in rural areas to accommodate learning and accommodate work and that sort of thing. But that means that if you've invested heavily in highly dense urban development, office parks, office high rises, the next few years could be challenging.
Chris Fitzsimon, another major issue that we're seeing and learning is the public infrastructure, health infrastructure, and the weaknesses of it. Health advocates say we need to make major investments in our health care departments across the state and across the nation.
Yeah, I think one of the lessons of this pandemic, the coronavirus pandemic, is that it sort of exposes where we were already weak. We've already had trouble with primary care physicians, with OBGYNs in rural areas. We've had problems with rural hospitals struggling, some closing in some areas. And I know there are some technological solutions, telehealth and a lot of other things, but you can't set a broken arm over the computer, and you can't deliver a baby by computer. So there's got to be a way, or online, there's got to be a way to make more investments, especially in rural health care, in public health, and a lot of other. It's really our fundamental human services infrastructure that we've neglected. And I think that's one of the reasons why this is hitting areas so hard.
Howard, what are you hearing on institutional care, in particular with our nursing homes, long-term care facilities, and even our correctional facilities?
I think that we are recognizing that certainly the possibility of infections occurring in these crowded institutions is very high. And, of course, we're going to have to find ways both to protect the caregivers as well as the potential patients in these institutions. I think we're looking at a drastic change in the way we deliver health care. America had a very strong vision when it created the public health system. Unfortunately, through the years, we abandoned that concept, and I think it's one that could pay dividends if it were operating now. But then we also recognize that we're not going to have a doctor or a hospital in every community, so how do we respond to the needs of the patients? And that is using paraprofessionals. Recently, I had to go to the doctor, and I didn't see my hematologist. I saw a physician's assistant. And so I think that kind of service in rural areas is going to become more prominent and certainly should be.
Joe Mavretic, a lot of local municipalities are feeling the pinch on their utility funds as well as their general funds. It looks like Congress can't reach any type of agreement on a bailout to help state, county, and local governments. What are we going to do?
Well, I think what's going to happen before we make any major changes is that the General Assembly and the executive branch in North Carolina are going to have driven home the point that we probably have 25, maybe even 30 counties whose revenue streams from their tax bases simply are not great enough to deliver the services that are required by Constitution and law. And this is going to get worse. The business about not paying your electric bill exacerbated it in the short term. But in the long term, we have counties that and probably 100 cities or towns that simply cannot provide the basic services required because of their revenue base. And I think that's going to be a major issue in the decade to come for our General Assembly.
Housing stability is another big issue, Chris. More than 40 million people could be displaced across the nation, a huge number here in North Carolina.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of issues there. One is we talked about the moratorium on evictions. It's going, it's happening around the country at some point. That's going to lift. But somebody asked a good question recently in the debate about that. When landlords do have to try to evict people who can't pay their rent, who's going to move in? I mean, who are the people who are going to take that spot anyway? We are in a bizarre, unprecedented time. And as Joe mentioned, it's the same thing with local governments. There's the short-term answer now. There's a short-term issue, but there's a long-term problem of affordable housing in our areas, urban areas especially, that we've had to wrestle with and never have really come to grips with.
Well, let's talk fall sports during COVID-19. UNC football coach Mack Brown says he's ready to play football. The Duke basketball team returned to campus this week, and the Carolina Hurricanes are winning their playoff hockey games in Toronto. Question one to John, can we safely play fall sports without fans?
Well, yes. I mean, it's safe. Nothing will be perfectly safe. That was true before COVID, okay? COVID's obviously highly risky, and I'm not diminishing it, but we have to take reasonable precautions and allow things like sports to proceed for students, for athletes, for whom there is no alternative. I mean, they can't just wait a year or two and then do it if they're a senior. We're going to have to proceed with that. But, of course, there are going to be significant limitations on who comes into a stadium or who comes into an arena, and that's going to last. That's going to last even past the vaccine to some extent, because vaccines are not silver bullets. They help to improve immunity for the individual and for the group as a whole, but we're going to be dealing with this communicable disease and others for the foreseeable future, and it will probably change things like ventilation and seating capacity in sports arenas.
ACC football announced their schedule this week, Joe. NFL is starting practice. The Carolina Panthers down in Charlotte are returning to camp. Would you be willing to play fall sports if you were a college athlete?
Well, of course I would. And the big thing for all of the business about professional sports for me is it's business as usual. I watch professional sports. I'm a Green Bay Packer fan. I watch it from my recliner with my remote and a bowl of popcorn. But let me digress just a second here. One of the things that nobody is talking about that I think is an absolute tragedy is the way that the university system has handled their secondary sport coaching staffs. Basically, they've just found a way to pay them out of their contracts for the least money and thrown them under the bus and said, good luck, try to find a job. And I think it's an awful way to treat people who have been coaching our lesser sports.
Chris, how would you grade the North Carolina High School Athletic Association?
Well, postponing, I think, high school sports for a while is a good idea. I think this is a particularly sensitive topic, even in some ways more than college, because these are minors. These are kids who are 15, 14, 16. You know, they're below 18 years old. Their parents are very concerned. I think it's the same principles, though, are going to apply. I can't quite imagine a packed high school football stadium anytime soon.
Well, we've come to the point in the show where we get to ask our panel to tell us something we don't know. Howard Lee, we'll start with you.
You know, I had the great pleasure of traveling around the state with Judge Howard Manning, a man who has been so dedicated to wanting to improve educational opportunities. And it certainly is timing in the current circumstance of how COVID-19 is impacting the teaching of our kids. Howdy developed some health challenges and had to drop out. Recently, he started to come back, and I just wanted to make sure that people know that the champion for great education and educational opportunities is coming back, and I'm just delighted that Howdy is returning to full force in engaging in that.
Joe Mavretic, tell us something we don't know.
Treasurer Falwell recently announced a negotiation for a 3-year period for the Medicaid Advantage group of North Carolina's about 150,000-160,000 senior retirees. The savings to the state for that are about $600 million, and he intends to use that to reduce the unfunded liability for the health care system, which is about $30 billion in debt. Dale Falwell just continues to get sweet deals for North Carolina.
That's right. Chris, tell us something we don't know.
This past week, there were a few primaries across the country, so there were a lot of interesting political races, but I thought it was interesting. The state of Missouri, hard to think, imagine a much redder state in recent years, approved Medicaid expansion. That means 38 states in the United States have now approved expanding Medicaid. It has never failed when it has been on the ballot. So we hear politicians a lot of times talking about the will of the people. The will of the people seems pretty clear here. North Carolina is an outlier now. There are 38 states that have expanded their Medicaid program.
John, quickly, we got 15 seconds.
All politics is not local, but local issues matter. That Cherokee versus Catawba casino fight in West North Carolina is a big political issue this year.
Thank you, sir. You've heard our spin on the issues of the day. To stay informed all during the week, sign up for our free weekly newsletter, give your feedback, and read Tom's weekly column. Visit our website at ncspin.com or catch NC Spin on Facebook. Join us next week when we'll have more balanced debate for the Old North State. Until then, stay informed and watch out for the spin.
In more than 21 years on NC Spin, I never endorsed a product or sponsor, but I volunteered to do this message for family physicians. Over the past 40 years, my family doctor could quickly diagnose my illnesses because he knew my medical history. Evidence suggests I'll live longer, have a higher quality of life, and save 33% on healthcare costs. I believe in my trusted relationship with my family physician.
Family Physicians, your trusted healthcare advisor for life.
Your life is more flexible and efficient than ever, and your energy is too. See how North Carolina's electric cooperatives are building a brighter future for the rural communities we serve at ncelectriccooperatives.com/brighter.
Join us next week and get the spin on issues facing our state. For more information or to learn how to contact us, visit our website, ncspin.com. NC Spin is a copyrighted production of Carolina Broadcasting System, Incorporated.